How's everybody doing?
Good, good. Are you having class next week on Hanukkah?
I'm available. Oh, sure. I'll be here.
Where am I going?
You got it. The captive audience.
Exactly.
Okay, so today I want to start discussing Hanukkah. I want to share another perspective we could take on the Yontif. As I always say, the more we prepare for a Yontif, the more we take out of it. If we think in advance about the concepts, the meaning of it, then as we celebrate it, it's much more meaningful. If we just kind of float into it as usual, so then as we celebrate it, we don't have that same connection. So we know Hanukkah is much more than latkes and donuts and lighting candles. We know that. We know that there's a lot of depth and understanding behind the message of the day, and it's always worthwhile to dwell upon the message and understand more about it. So I'm going to share with you today primarily an idea that was said over by Rav Aaron Leib Steinman years ago at a Hanukkah Mesiba. We're talking, if you want to know the date, it was about 15 years ago. And I'm working from a sefer that has this discussion recorded from Rav Steinman. And the point begins with the following premise. On Hanukkah, there's two major mitzvahs we do. Number one is we light the candles. That's obviously something that we're very familiar with. And we do all it in Hanukkah. Also in Hanukkah, there's a mitzvah called Hallel V'Hodah. We're supposed to give praise and thanks to Hashem. And those are two mitzvahs that the Gemara discusses. Their obligations in Hanukkah. The Hallel V'Hodah is primarily said by reciting Hallel in Al Nisim, in our davening and benching. And lighting the candles is lighting the candles. We know how those both work. If we were to break down what each one of these mitzvahs is marking. So lighting the candles obviously marks the miracle of the candles, of the oil being found and burning for 8 days. And the idea of praising Hashem, Hallel V'Hodah, that primarily is talking about the miracle of winning the war. We know the war in Hanukkah was Rabbeinu Atim. The army of the Jews was very weak and small and feeble. The army of the Greek Empire was quite powerful. And there was a tremendous nes which occurred. And we overcame that army. So the praise we give to Hashem, the Hallel V'Hodah, it's clear Al HaNisim really focuses very much on the victorious battles the Jews had during the times of Hanukkah. Al HaNisim does not really discuss the candles at all. Whereas the mitzvah of lighting the menorah certainly is marking the miracle of the candles. So those are the two major aspects and mitzvahs of Hanukkah. Now, if we were to dwell upon for a second, the mitzvah that we're so familiar with, that's so dear and precious to us, the mitzvah of lighting the candles, it's marking a miracle, which in a certain sense, I hate to say it this way, was not so meaningful, was not so necessary. I mean, if we have a war and we're fighting for Torah observance, so the Greeks came, they decreed against the Jews, we could not observe Torah properly, we fought for religious freedom. And that was a necessity, because if we gave in, we'd be gone. We would have all become Hellenists, assimilated, and lost the chance to serve Hashem. However, when they got to the Beis HaMikdash, and they were short on oil, and couldn't light the menorah, it was a very special thing. We were able to do the mitzvah for 8 days. But it was totally unnecessary. Meaning, if we did not do the mitzvah, if we waited a week to get more oil, what would be lost? I mean, how would that have impacted the future of the Jewish people? Furthermore, halachically, there are many ways we could explain how the Jews could have either lit the oil even in an impure state, or ultimately there's always the rule of halacha called onus rachman apatre. When you are in a situation where you're unable to do mitzvah physically, so you're exempt, you're pater. You're not held liable for that. If somebody is locked in prison and can't access a menorah, is God holding him liable for not lighting the menorah? No, because he's onus. He's somebody who's in a situation under duress, he can't do it. So he's pater, he's exempt. So the Jews, on the one hand, if they had no oil, they'd be exempt. But if they found oil that was impure, halachically, there's a lot of grounds to say they could have lit impure oil. So the miracle they found this one jug of pure oil, they're able to use it, and it burned for 8 days, was a miracle which is unnecessary and somewhat minor and insignificant, if I put it in those terms. And beyond that, we mark miracles which occur to us, mitzvos, which last for generations. Usually it's because that miracle was a miracle that saved the Jewish people. Meaning, if you look at Jewish history, there's plenty of miracles which occurred. And even the Gemara discusses individuals who had miracles occur to them. Not miracles, some to save their lives, and some just for, you know, whatever issue came up, miracles would occur. But we don't have holidays that are set aside to mark those miracles. Why? Because they weren't essential for the existence of Klal Yisrael. And we only mark miracles that are essential for the people's existence, for the Jewish people to endure and survive. The miracles which occurred, which seemed to be insignificant, so then we don't mark them. I mean, we appreciate them. We recognize that Hashem runs the world. We don't make a yontif out of it. So for instance, you know, Pesach is a yontif. Why? Because we were slaves. We became free. That was a salvation for the entire people. So we make a yontif out of it. Purim, we were about to be totally exterminated and miraculously we were saved. It's a yontif. Hanukkah, if you're marking the battle of Hanukkah, so we understand that was a threat to the entire people and therefore we were saved. We should mark it. But marking the miracle of the oil, it seems to be something which is a nice thing, but totally unnecessary. How did that miracle actually speak to the entire existence and future of the Jewish people? So that's one question that we should address. We'll also talk more about the following a little bit later on. Even the miracle of the war, the miracle occurred only to some individuals, meaning ultimately it impacted the entire people. But it was a very small army of Jews that rose up. Most Jews at the time were not fighting, whether because they themselves became Hellenists, they're Mesiavnim, whether because they just didn't rise up to fight. But it was a very small group, the Hashmonaim and those who followed them, that rose up to fight against the Greeks. So we're marking a miracle which really only individuals brought about, we're marking his entire nation. So simply there we'd say, yeah, because that victory impacted all of us, which is true, but we understand a little bit better what's the depth of that? What's the idea that individuals can rise up and fight and that will impact all of us? So maybe let's take it piece by piece. So the first question, you know, how was the miracle of the menorah something which impacted the entire people? How was it necessary for our salvation? So I'll share with you two different perspectives on this. The first one's from the Sfas Emes, from one of the Ger Rebbe. The Sfas Emes says a beautiful thing. Now, if you look historically at the times of Hanukkah, the Jews were at a very, very low point historically. It was the times of the Second Temple. Second Temple times in their own right were challenging. We never quite got back to the level of the First Temple. The miracles ceased to exist on a daily basis. We were under first Persian rule and then Greek rule. It was challenging. Not all the Jews came back from Babylonia into Eretz Yisrael, some remained behind. There was infighting. There are Jews who were tzedukim, who were not following the ways of the rabbis. It was a difficult time for us. And when Hanukkah came about, that was kind of like the nail in the coffin, meaning that not only were we struggling along as a nation, but we had oppressors come in and deny us observing of Torah. And that was a terrible, terrible blow to the Jewish people. And we were at a very low level at that point. As a people, as individuals, everybody's at a very low level. So the Jews come in and they fight this battle. You know, a small group of Jews gets up and says, no, we're not going to tolerate it. We have to stand up and fight for the honor of Torah, honor of Hashem. And they fight. Now the Sfas Emes says, based on the Gemara, a lot of Jews didn't even recognize the magnitude of the miracle till a year later. I mean, because they're in such a low state, they're all down, they were dejected, they'd given up. So even when things start moving in a positive direction, it didn't really inspire them or drive them. Just as an analogy, you know, God forbid someone who's in a state of depression. So good things can happen all around them and they just don't even recognize, they don't notice it. They're just, you know, they're wallowing in their own grief and sorrow. They're not able to get up and say, wow, there's so many positive things happening in my life, I better get up and change. They don't do that because they're in depression. So the Jews were like in a state of depression at that point. The entire people, they had seen the miracle of Hanukkah and they still were not, you know, aroused or inspired by it. That's what Sfas Emes explains. So what did they need in order to be lifted up? So the fact that the Jews won the war against the Greeks and reinstated observance of mitzvahs in Torah, that's something that didn't yet speak to those Jews that were so down and depressed in the dumps. However, when they saw the miracle of the menorah, that Hashem came in and did this extra miracle, something which was not necessary. It was, whether it be halachically, whether it be for the sake of our survival, we didn't need it. Hashem did it anyways. Why? Because Hashem was trying to lift us up from out of the dumps and inspire us, to show us that I love you, you're my people, I care about you, I want to uplift you, I want to inspire you, I want you to change, I want you to move beyond that depression and that sorrow, and approach me once again, and then reconnect. So the miracle of the menorah, we didn't need physically, we needed emotionally, if you put it that way. We needed it psychologically. We needed it as a people to be uplifted. It wasn't that Hashem was just trying to save us from oppressors. It wasn't just a matter of, you know, we had to regain the right to observe Torah. We had to regain our own emotional state of happiness and connection to God. And that was only done through the extra miracle. And we noticed the extra miracle which occurred. Hashem didn't just save us, but he gave us extra special miracle, a kiss, as I like to call it, a kiss from Hashem. He did a miracle which is unnecessary, insignificant, halachically and physically not needed. He did it anyways. That brought us out of the pits and helped to bring us up again to the state we needed to be in to serve Hashem. The Nesiv HaShalom, the son of a Rebbe, he gives a very powerful analogy. He describes, how do you differentiate between Shabbos, Yontif, and Hanukkah? How are they different? So he says very simply the following. He says that Shabbos is a day that we describe as we go to the king's palace. Shabbos is there every single week, and Hashem allows us into his palace. And we're able to have a day of holiness connected with the king. Yomtif is the king coming to our homes. Yomtif happens during the week. You're allowed to cook. It's a little different atmosphere than Shabbos. And that's like you welcome the king into your home. What's Hanukkah? He says Hanukkah is what happens if the king's son falls into the sewer, and the king has to go in his royal garments and schlep him out of the sewer and save him. So that's Hanukkah, because the Jews were in the sewer. The Jews were in a very, very low state, and Hashem came in and pulled us out. So I can elaborate more upon that. That's not the focus for today. But the idea of the miracle of the candles was that Hashem was using it to lift us up, to uplift us, to elevate us, to inspire us, to make us happy and connected once again, and pull us out of our state of depression and out of our state of despair. And that was the idea of that miracle. So that's my answer to this question. So the miracle really did hit at a core salvation needed for Klal Yisrael, not physically, but emotionally and spiritually. And that could be one role of that miracle and why we mark it every single year in Hanukkah. But let's take it maybe from another perspective as well. Now, if you think about this miracle, so the rabbis teach us, it's Mishnah and Pirkei Avos, that 10 miracles occur daily in the Beis HaMikdash. In the first temple, not the second temple, but in the first temple period, they had 10 daily miracles. And the Mishnah lists what they all were. So miracles in the Beis HaMikdash were not uncommon. It was a miraculous place. It was a place where you walked in and you could experience miracles on a daily basis. It happens to be that even the miracle of the oil burning longer was a daily miracle in the Beis HaMikdash. In the first temple period, and also in the second temple period until the death of Shimon HaTzadik, one of the candles in the menorah would burn daily longer than the rest. And that one would remain constantly burning until the Kohen came and put it out, miraculously. So the idea of oil burning longer than its fair share, that is something which was commonplace in the Beis HaMikdash. So when we're marking this miracle, now, what exactly are we marking as out of the ordinary? What's unique about it? So let's maybe see it from a different perspective. The Jews fought this war. And this war was a war which they won miraculously. It was against the odds. But it doesn't have to be perceived as a miracle. I mean, I'm sure it's happened other times in history that nations that had weak, feeble armies overcame more powerful nations. It's against the odds. It's not common, but it occurs. I mean, we've seen it in modern times. We can look at the early wars that Israel fought against all the Arab nations. Six-Day War in particular, I think, but all those wars where the Israelis had an army which was smaller, less equipped than all the nations attacking them, and they overcame them. So we as Jews will say, we think it's miraculous. We think God's protecting us. But the nations of the world, they'll see it as okay. The Israelis had good planning, good warfare, good luck, whatever you want to call it, they don't necessarily attribute it to a miracle. So when you win a war against an oppressor and your army is small and weak, it's against the odds to win that war, but it's not miraculous necessarily. It doesn't necessarily indicate that God was involved in that miracle. We don't know that. It's unlikely. If you're a believer in God, you'll say, wow, it's miraculous, but you don't have to say that. When you see a miracle which is supernatural, such as oil burning for 8 days straight, even though it was only enough to burn for one day, that's something that only could occur if God does it. Yeah, there you have to recognize that there's a God involved. So Hashem wanted to come in and do a miracle that was clearly his doing. That was the role of the miracle in the midst of Mikdash, of the oil burning 8 days. And why did Hashem do that? Why didn't Hashem just leave it and say, okay, they won the war, my purpose was served. Why does Hashem have to come in and say, I'm doing a miracle that's supernatural, just to indicate that I'm involved? So Rosh Teiman explains the following point. He says, let's think of the Hanukkah story. You have this empire that takes over the land of Israel and oppresses the Jews. Most Jews just remain passive. They gave in. Many assimilated, became Hellenists. And we were in a very difficult state. There was a very small group of Jews that rose up to fight. Percentage-wise, a very small group. I mean, the numbers historically are small. I mean, Rashi, there's even a source in Rashi, I think, they began with about 13 soldiers against an entire empire. I mean, I think it built up after that. But it was a very small group fighting against a major world empire. You know, like imagine America goes to attack Micronesia or something. You know, some tiny, far-flung country that only has the citizens who actually live there are probably smaller than the American soldiers. I mean, and they would win. Imagine that. So a small group rises up against this world power. And they won with Hashem's help. But Hashem wanted to recognize this group. I mean, it wasn't about Hashem's honor. It was about the honor of the Hashmonaim, of the Maccabees, of this group that was leading the Jews to fight against the Greeks. Hashem wanted to show that I value what these people did. They risked their lives. They sacrificed literally their lives. They stood up, dedicated to me, and they fought for my cause. So Hashem wanted to show the value that he put upon these small group of Jews fighting for Torah, fighting for God, and fighting for the Jewish people. If he didn't make this miracle, then Hashem wouldn't be reacting to them. They would have won. They could have attributed it to themselves or to God, depending on how religious they were, how much emunah they had. But when Hashem comes in after the fact and does this miracle, Hashem is putting his stamp of approval on these people, saying, I value what you did. I recognize you. I'm with you. I appreciate it, and I see the power of your actions. And it was an incredible jolt of inspiration to that group. But beyond that, it was the whole Jewish people seeing what individuals can do. So Hashem, and you could ask the question, even when they won the war, they didn't totally vanquish the Greeks. I mean, the Greek Empire was still around. And what exactly happened that the decrees stopped? The answer is that when Hashem saw the dedication of those Jews rising up to fight, Hashem then, he in his own intervention, had the Greeks stop these decrees. However it was done, but we see it all as a response of Hashem to the self-sacrifice and dedication of this small group that rose up to fight. It's a fascinating thing that, what was required here was, it was an act of self-sacrifice. What were they sacrificing for? They were sacrificing on behalf of the Torah, of observance, of mitzvos. You know, the famous three decrees that were made were against Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, and Bris Milah. But if you look at sources, there's lists and lists of different decrees that were made by the Greeks getting in our way of observance. And only this group was willing to stand up and fight for it. But because of this group, Hashem gave the salvation to the entire Jewish people. But there was a challenge here. And the challenge was, do you see this as natural course, or do you see this as miraculous? Do you see this as divine intervention, or do you see this as just some sort of military might or military fluke that they could win? Now, there's a different decree which they made, a fascinating decree. It says that the Greeks told the Jews to write on the horns of your ox that you have no portion in the God of Israel. Kisvulchem okeren ashor, you should write on the horn of the ox, she'inlechem chilk elkei Yisrael, you have no portion in the God of Israel. Very funny decree. So everyone had to take their ox, and they had to, I don't know if they engraved it or they took a marker, I don't know what they did, but they wrote on the horns that we have no portion in God. That was the decree they made us do. And the question is, what do they have against the horns of the ox? Like, why is that the place? I mean, they want to put up like billboards. You Jews have no portion in God. They can do that. They can think of radio ads and fly banners, but what's the divinity on the horn of the ox? So Rosh Teiman says, well, it's very simple. In their days, the ox was, I guess, equivalent to the modern day tractor. It was a farming society. And the main tool they used to work their farms was their oxen. That was the tractor. And they used to hook to the oxen, the plow, and all the different tools. They would make attachments for the ox. That's the same way a modern day farmer has his tractor and hooks everything to his tractor. So too, in their days, the ox was the tractor. So you'd go out to work. And the main source of income was your farm. And when you go out to work, you always face this challenge. Am I succeeding because of my own personal skill and power and might? Or am I succeeding because Hashem helps me? And that's a challenge that we always face in terms of when we make money and we succeed, who's doing it? Is it me or is it God? And that's a funny question sometimes because we do our hishtadlus, we put forth our efforts. We have an obligation to put forth those efforts. But yet we have to always say, but the results that I achieve are because Hashem has allowed me to achieve those results. So the Greeks said, you're going to work. And you're a good Jew. You believe that God is the one who's helping your farm succeed. But you're going to stare at your tractor. You're going to stare at your ox. And your ox is going to say, no, God has nothing to do with you. And slowly the message will seep in that it's not God, it's me. And that's the message that the Greeks were trying to get across to us. They're trying to teach us, no, God's not involved. No, he doesn't get involved in this world. It's all about us, the human being. The world's focused on humans, humans succeed and humans accomplish, but God doesn't get involved. So just like they told us, right on the horns of our ox, in a portion of God, and that was because they wanted to drive home their understanding that God had nothing to do with human success and efforts and accomplishment. So too, when we fought the war, we still had that challenge. Are we going to attribute the victory to ourselves or to God? So we get this miracle of the oil burning, and God is saying, it was me. That's number one. Here I am. It was me. The same way I'm having this oil burn for 8 days, recognize I'm the one who helped you win the war. The Ramban says that it's from the open miracles we're able to perceive hidden miracles. And winning the war is a hidden miracle because it could be natural. Oil burning 8 days is an open miracle. But when you perceive open miracles, it helps you connect the dots and say, yeah, if open miracles are from God, then the hidden miracles also from God. And you put it all together. But beyond that, we're saying Hashem wasn't just showing it was me. He was showing that I value those people that rose up and fought on my behalf. And I want to give them my stamp of approval, my medal of honor, my love, my kiss. And everyone should realize what it means to stand up and fight on behalf of God. So that's one big lesson over here. But it goes a step further. Rav Steinman says the following point. He says that we see how much every individual can accomplish for the entire people. Because this group is really individuals. It wasn't really an organized army. It wasn't a majority of the people. It wasn't, you know, any political organization leading it. It was a bunch of individuals who got together and started fighting for the right cause. The Gemara says in Maseches Megillah, it talks about how Hashem never forsakes us in exile. No enemies rise up against us. We'll be in the land of our enemies. And it says, L'ma'astim, I won't despise them. L'ga'altim, I won't be disgusted by them, etc. And Hashem always stands by and helps us be victorious through the difficult times. And the Gemara basically goes through examples of different times in exile and individuals that stood up and did incredible actions during those times. It says in the times of the Kasdim, we had Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah. In times of the Avanim of the Greeks, we had the Chashmonaim and Shimon HaTzadik, the Hanukkah story in Matisyahu. In the times of Haman, we had Mordechai and Esther. In the times, you know, of the Roman times, there was the great sages, Rebbe, and all of the great sages of the Sanhedrin, etc. And it lists individuals that kind of step in our behalf. And Rav Steinman wants to explain the following. He says, what's the focus on these individuals? And the answer is, even if you look historically, these individuals didn't necessarily stand up and lead an entire army. They didn't necessarily get up and make these inspiring speeches and change everybody around. But these individuals did what they were supposed to do. When Daniel was thrown into the lion's den because of his beliefs in God, Rechonai, Mishael, and Azariah were thrown into the fiery furnace, or Mordechai and Esther were put to the challenge in Haman's times, etc., they didn't get up and galvanize the people necessarily. They did their role as individuals. And on the one hand, so Mordechai and Esther are different. Esther was a queen, so she had a lot of power in her control. But let's say you talk about the sages of the Gemara, you know, Rebbe, or the sages of Sanhedrin. We talk about Matisyahu and the Chashmonaim of the Maccabees and the Hanukkah story. Or you talk about even Daniel in his story. So all these people are put to the challenge to sacrifice on behalf of God, to risk themselves and risk their lives and their own being for God's sake. And they did it. But along with them, like the engine on a train, came an entire people, even though they didn't even intend for it necessarily. When the Hashemim were fighting, they're individuals, but we see it as a salvation of our people, and it was. But why was that? What happened to everyone else? The answer is when they stood up and did this, so they recognize we are responsible as individuals for the entire people. It's not about ourselves. They didn't just get run away and serve God in a cave. They got up and fought because they said, we are responsible for the entire nation. That's our role. That's who we are. And a person could say to themselves, well, am I going to change the world? I mean, it's just the 13 of us over here, right? We're going to fight against the entire Greek army. We can change the world. Why don't we just go do our own thing? And the answer is yes. An individual can change the world. An individual can make a humongous difference, both certainly through proactively reaching out to others. But the other point is even through their own personal dedication, that effort being put forth, God recognizes and he brings the world change because of that. So let's think, there's two ways one can really change the world. So one is directly trying to change the world. You get up, you make speeches, you bring innovations, you lead. That's one way to do it. We know there's a famous quote from Rav Shach. Rav Shach pointed one time to the question. People question the idea of Mashiach. Mashiach is supposed to be one individual who comes and changes around the entire world from the way things are now to believing in God. They'll say, how can one person have such an influence? One human being? So Rav Shach said, well, look at Hitler. Yimach Shemo. Hitler is somebody that got up. He was able to take an entire nation and quote unquote inspire them to what they did. Turn people that were somewhat civilized into beasts, into murderers, millions of them, one individual. So if you could do it for the sake of evil, then for sure, but for good, you could do it as well. If one person can change the world for evil, then one person can certainly change the world for good. So that's somebody who is purposely trying to make a change. But there's another point. When you do what you're supposed to do in your own life, you're dedicated, you make tough choices, you sacrifice for the sake of God and Torah. So Hashem sees that, he values it, and change is brought to the world because of your actions. And that's the message of Chanukah. Chanukah is about Mesiras Nefesh, it's about self-sacrifice. And these individuals, they got up and sacrificed of themselves for the sake of God. God saw that, and he brought about change because of it. It wasn't that they directly made a change. It was that because of their efforts, God brought around a change to the entire people. All those Jews, what happened to all those Jews that were Mesiavnim, that became Hellenists? Did they automatically like do tshuva and they once again became good, observant Jews? It's funny, but it seems like it did happen. Gradually, they all came back. And where did it come from? So you could say it came from they saw miracles, but you could also say because those Jews who did fight were Moser Nefesh, they sacrificed on God's behalf, God came in and helped others change around their heart and their focus back to God once again. So you have a handful of people who are Moser Nefesh, who sacrifice for God, and everything changes. And this is true in every generation, our generation as well. That is when we do in our own level, we don't have to get be the leaders of a nation, but as long as we get up and we do what we're supposed to do, even in the face of challenge, even if things are difficult, we make the tough choices. So that has an impact on the entire world around us. And when God sees that, he says, you've gotten the message, you've gotten the point. And now I can bring about change as well on a much more global level. So everyone in their own way. So even if it's not going to be, we hope that we don't have to worry like the Hashanayim did and risk our lives as they did for God. But on a daily basis, they're sacrificing for God. Now, when you have to make a tough choice, when you have to do something uncomfortable because it's the right thing to do. You do something which is inconvenient because this is what the mitzvah is to do. So that's sacrificing on behalf of God. And when we do that, the changes that come out of that can be something which is incredible, which is something we can't imagine what those changes would do. Those changes make a very big difference. So it's something which speaks to our own daily challenges and the Mesiras Nefesh that we need to serve God. To add in another angle on this for a moment, The Bach says, the Bach's one of the commentaries in Halacha on the Torah, and the Bach says that what was the spiritual cause for the story of Hanukkah? Meaning every challenge the nation of the Jewish nation has to endure has a spiritual cause behind it. So what was going on spiritually that caused us to have to fight against the Greeks and go through this difficult time? So Bach says it's because we're in a srashlu bavoda. We became lazy about serving God. There was this srashlu, there was this rifyon that we became weak, lazy, lax in our service of Hashem. And because of that, Hashem brought about these decrees. So what is that telling us? Is mida k'neged mida, measure for measure. If you're lazy about serving God, so God removes the opportunities to serve him. If we're not serving God with full devotion, with full diligence, so then Hashem says, well, if you don't appreciate the mitzvah, I'm going to take away the opportunity to do the mitzvah. So when the Jews were in a srash l'vodah, when they became weak and lazy about serving God, Hashem says, okay, so the Greeks will come in and not allow you to serve God. So what's to happen then? How do we get over that? So Hashem says, well, I need to see how much mitzvahs mean to you. If this whole decree came about because you didn't take mitzvahs seriously and you became lazy about them, they weren't so important to you. They became the third on the list, not first on the list. So I'm gonna take away the opportunity. And until you show me how dedicated you are, you won't get them back. So what happens? They're taken away from us. In comes the Greek army, and they don't allow us to serve God. What do we have to do? We don't just say, okay, we're sorry, Hashem, we better. We have to actually stand up and show self-sacrifice, risk our own lives for the sake of mitzvos. That's what we have to do. Because why? It's an indication of how much it means to us. So because the whole story of Hanukkah began, because mitzvos became not so meaningful, not priorities, we became lax about them. So the miracle of Hanukkah occurs only when we're willing to risk our lives for mitzvos and show how meaningful they are, show our dedication. And Hanukkah is all about that idea of showing how dedicated we are to mitzvos. You know, we're celebrating the fact that a group of Jews stood up and they said that we will not tolerate this persecution. We want to keep Shabbos, learn Torah, do mitzvos, and therefore we're going to fight on God's behalf until we get it back. And they fought to the death, and they won. But it was all part of that. Hashem says, if you take mitzvos seriously, then you have opportunities to actually perform them. If you don't take them seriously, so you lose the opportunities. And that was the give and take of the story. It's a message. You know, we don't have any answers. We don't necessarily know why things happen. But certainly a message we can all take for ourselves this year. This year, many mitzvos that we are used to doing, the opportunities were gone. Whether it be going to shul, whether it be chesed to others, hosting guests, visiting others, you know, visiting the sick, even we can't do in the same way as we would. Going to funerals, going to weddings, the mitzvos that are things which are and have been primary focal points in our lives, were just taken away from us this year. And slowly, things will be coming back. And Yirtzeh Hashem soon, we'll have them back totally. But again, we don't know the reason, but certainly contemplation can be, well, maybe Hashem took the opportunities away because we didn't take them as seriously as we should have. And if we don't appreciate the mitzvahs that we have, so Hashem says, okay, so you lose the opportunity. Show me your appreciation and you'll get them back. So now that all of us, you know, I think we all appreciate these things much more at this point in our lives. You know, after this year has gone by, the ability to go to shul and daven on a Shabbos morning is so much more meaningful to us than it may have been a year ago. The ability to go and dance at a wedding, or even, you know, God forbid, to attend a funeral. You know, that's also something which, you know, there's a meaningful aspect to that. And we haven't been able to do it in the right way this year. But we appreciate it much more now. And as things sort of hopefully gradually get back to normal, we have to go in with that new appreciation that when the opportunity was lost, it could be because we didn't take it so seriously beforehand. And now the opportunity is coming back. We have to be sure that we take it seriously and appreciate the opportunity which is there. So it's something that I thought about when I was thinking about Hanukkah, but it's something for us all to contemplate. Again, I'm not a prophet and I can't tell you why things happen, but we definitely take lessons out of it. And this is a contemplation which I think is very meaningful. And we've all experienced, you know, ourselves this year in a very, very clear way. So that's the point. But I think one message of Hanukkah is the power of the individual. and how individuals can change the world not only through direct influence, but also through their own personal dedication. And that is a message that we learned from the Chashmonaim. And the message of the miracle of the candles, as we're saying now, was not just that Hashem was the one involved in the miracle. It was that I'm appreciating the individuals that stood up and made that change. Because individuals can make major changes in the people. It's been said, and this might be a controversial discussion, which is had amongst, you know, great rabbis. But the question arises, you know, let's say you're trying to design a yeshiva curriculum. So you have a few options. One option can be, we're going to design it in a very high level, extremely intense, because we want to produce a real leader, a Gadol Hador, somebody who's going to rise above the pack and lead the entire nation. The problem with that is the students that aren't ready for it will fall off if they can't handle such an intense curriculum. So either they're just going to do nothing, or even worse, they'll leave yeshiva and take up something else because, you know, they're not interested in learning in an environment that's too intense for them and too advanced for them. Or you can build a yeshiva that, you know, it's less intense. People, expectations are lower. The learning is not quite as advanced. But in that format, it's less likely to produce a real leader. And the question is, what do you do? So it happens to be nowadays, you have yeshivas of all shapes and sizes. And some yeshivas are built more to produce those leaders than Gedolei HaDor. And some are built more to cater to the everyday type of student. But if you were to say, what's the ideal? So this is a big discussion, and, you know, there's many opinions on it. But Rav Dessler writes that he feels, even if you're going to lose many, many students along the way, it's better to make that yeshiva that produces the gadol, you know, the great Torah leader and sage, even though you might end up with 100 students that have fallen off the side because of it. It's an astounding statement. But what he probably means is that the value of that one Torah leader for the entire people is so valuable. What he can do to change the entire nation is so vast. Even if 100 students or more fall along the way because of the structure of his yeshiva, it's worth it to produce that Adam Gadol, that great person. It's not the only opinion out there, the other opinions as well. I'm not saying that's what should be done. But the message is telling you the power of the individual. That one individual that can rise above the rest or make the tough choices or push himself or herself to the extent that there's a lot of sacrifice and dedication on behalf of God, that person changes the world. And that's the big message of the Hanukkah story. Any questions? Okay, so I wish you have a very happy Hanukkah and look forward to next Tuesday.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.